This is Stephen Whitaker and Eddie Chang coming to you one final time from Schreiber Radio, WDOT, and we have one more interview for you this afternoon. Ms. Esther Giesels, did I pronounce that correctly?
Giesels, yes.
Giesels. And we're going to have some questions for you.
Good afternoon, Ms. Giesels. We would like to start the interview with the first question. Can you please describe to us your life prior to the war?
Well, I lived in a big city in Lodz, Poland. We didn't have the luxuries that we have today. I mean, today's life is, to me, it's like a dream. We had small apartments. We went to public school. We had to help in the house. Not everybody was rich in Poland. Don't forget, we're talking about 60, 70 years ago, and the whole world changed the last few years. So we lived modestly, but it was a nice life because we were close with family, we had our education, and we didn't know any better, so of course it was good.
Prior to the war, as the gathering storm, as many people call it, like what Hitler's plans were, did your parents ever fear of Hitler's intentions?
Yes, they did fear, but there was no place to go. My parents weren't wealthy, and they didn't have much money to go anywhere. So they had a small business, which they earned a comfortable living. They had two children, and to leave a home and all their belongings and family and to go immigrate someplace without the language or without knowing anything about the country, of course they didn't. And I was the oldest. I was 10 years old exactly when the war broke out. So I cannot have many. I don't remember too well what they talked about. If they did talk about it, it was without the kids, of course. And really, that was for the poorer people in Poland. We there was no place to go. Nobody wanted us.
So how old were you before when you were first captured?
Well, I was 10 years old when the war broke out. And then about 6 months, they created the Lodz Ghetto. And I was there with my parents and my little brother, who was 2 years younger than I was. And we suffered for 4.5 years, but horribly. The ghetto, whatever you reading books and this, it can bring out the essence of our torture and of our hunger, the starvation. People were dying of starvation. And it was very tough. It was very horrible.
So I understand that you were sent to Auschwitz.
Yes.
Can you please describe your experience there?
Well, when the Russian advanced, you know, the war was coming. This was already 1944. And the Russian army advanced Poland. And the Lodz Ghetto was liquidated in August 1944. We came to Auschwitz, which I was separated from my mother, and I was left alone in Auschwitz at the age of 14. And from there, my mother went to the left, I went to the right, and my mother was 37 years old, and she was gassed right away and sent to a and burned in the crematorium. My little brother, who was 12 years old at the time, had the same dad, my aunt, with my cousins and other people. And I was to the right, and I was sent to the showers where they shaved my head and sent me to my barrack. And I was in Auschwitz like this under horrible, horrible conditions for 6 weeks.
Now, I understand at this time period at Auschwitz, the man known as Dr. Mengele was there. Did you encounter this man at all?
Yes. When we had the selection upon arriving from the Lodz Ghetto, he was in front of us. He segregated us, yes. He said whoever looked good and he could get some work out of us and we had a little bit more color in our faces or a little more flesh on our bones, he thought that we were healthy enough to still work. And the ones that he had no use for, he said to the left, he said to the gas chambers. Yes, I saw him. He was in front of us. He made the segregation.
What was life like in the concentration camp?
Oh, horrible. First of all, what I remember the most is the torture with the sailor bell at 5 o'clock in the morning. They counted us, which was so unnecessary because there were no place. We couldn't escape any place. We were surrounded by electric wires in Auschwitz, and there were watchtowers all over us. I mean, every few feet we had a watchtower with a German soldier watching us. When we, if we would go next to the electric wires, we were executed. There was no place to go. I mean, it was so, they just tortured us. They created all this torturing for people to die faster. So we stayed in the sailor pearl, and then we had the watery coffee, which was the ersatz coffee, they used to call it, and a piece of bread and a soup. This was our food for the day. And at night again, we had a sailor pearl, and in the morning, it was pure torture. I tell you, I lived through it, and I'm lucky that my memory is good and I remember, but I cannot comprehend how anybody could survive it.
So eventually you were transferred to the Bergen-Belsen camp?
I was in Bergen-Belsen, right. Too, yes, from Auschwitz.
And then to Rochlitz.
But when I came to Bergen-Belsen, again the same thing. The war was coming to an end, the Russians were advancing, and they had no room for us because they had a lot of Hungarian Jews and the Polish Jews, and they didn't know what to do with us. And we had no barracks. There was no empty space for us. We slept in November. We slept on ice and snow, and we were sheltered by tents. They put up tents for us to stay under. And I remember sleeping on ice and snow. And also they gave us a blanket to cover ourselves. And I remember I had my feet were frozen, and I tore away a piece of blanket to cover my bare feet, and I got a good beating from a German because I was destroying the property of the Third Reich. Whatever I tell you, I can't even describe it correctly, what the suffering, what they put us up on, so...
So how were you able to escape from these concentration camps?
I didn't escape. They sent me. We were like, we couldn't do nothing on our own. We had nothing. Nobody was there to give us a hand. We had nothing. We were like, we had the partisans which fought the Germans. We had the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, which they were real heroes because they did fight the Nazis, and they killed some of them. But how can you compare a small amount of people to the power of Germany at the time with all their tanks and with ammunition? We had nothing. If the partisans had a few guns among them, this was a lot. But we tried to, but we went like sheep to the slaughter, unfortunately. We didn't want to do it. We had a lot of this, but... It was something that I hope and pray that the world would never, ever see it again. And we should learn to live with one another because we all human beings, life is very short. We're only here for a very short time and we only should make the world better and not, God forbid, learn from that. So.
By partisans, were you talking about the Polish resistance?
No, I'm not talking because I don't know much about the Polish resistance. I talk about the Jewish resistance. Okay. They were hiding in the forests, and they were digging holes. They slept in holes, and but we couldn't accomplish nothing. Look at the war lasted for over 5 years. England, America, and Russia, we all fought the Nazis. So where do we come in to have a part in it? We were helpless, and nobody lifted a finger for us.
So after the liberation and the war was over, how long did it take to return to your normal life?
Well, it was difficult for me. I was at the time, I was 15, 16 years old, and I wanted to leave Poland very much. And we came from Poland, we had to smuggle back to the German zone, so because that we had immigration there, we could register to immigrate to either Palestine or America or whatever. And that's what we did. We had to smuggle out of Poland. And I came to America in 1947 at the age of 17, and life began. And I love being here. I love America. I love everything about it. And I'm a very, with all my experience, what I went through in childhood and adolescence years, I can say that I'm a very positive person. I don't hate anybody. I could have done without my experiences. I could have grown up in a normal world. But I guess every generation has something, and I was the unlucky one that it fell upon me, the Holocaust. And this is the world we live in, and we have to make it a better world for the children who are young and starting to make a life for themselves. So I'm talking to the children because I want to make a better world for them, really. They should learn from my experiences. It should never, ever happen to any other people.
Mr. Ronell, in the previous interview, brought up a very interesting point about the Holocaust deniers. And what do you feel about this situation?
Well, I'm not a politician. You know, I was a good mother, and I'm a good grandma, and I'm 78 years old. And today's politics, really, I cannot understand a lot of things. I ignore it because I know in my heart what happened and what it is. And there's a lot of things that are not right in this world. So what, I'm going to tell the president of Iran that he's wrong, that he's another Hitler? Like, who will listen to me? But I feel it. Of course we have to bring something about that he should stop, and we should watch his nuclear weapons. We should be aware of it. There was, let us know, no, when Hitler came to power, nobody believed him either. So here we go. We had experience. We have to be aware of things that are going to that might happen, God forbid, but they might happen.
All right. Thank you, ma'am. We're out of time for the day, so we appreciate you very much coming
by
to speak to us.
Thank you for listening, and I hope if I touched a few kids, this is my goal. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am.